for joining us on the Accomplish Radio Show, broadcasting most weekday mornings at 10 a.m. Central, which is 11 Eastern and 8 Pacific. We're celebrating over 100 shows and over 18,000 listeners that have been searching for answers on how to accomplish more in their personal and professional life. Today's broadcast will replay all day at AccomplishMagazine.com, and it's also available in the iTunes community. When you visit our website, sign up for your free subscription of Accomplish Magazine and make sure to join our fan page on Facebook. I'm your host, Darlene Willman, the publisher of Accomplish Magazine, interviewing another phenomenal guest today. And for the month of February, we've been bringing you guests on relationships, both personal and professional. And these are experts from all over the world. And today's guest is Dr. Gary Chapman from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Dr. Chapman is a well-known marriage counselor and director of marriage seminars. He has served as the senior associate pastor of Calvary Baptist Church in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, for more than 30 years and has written more than 30 books. The Five Love Languages, one of Chapman's most popular titles, topped various best-selling charts for years, selling upwards of 5 million copies and landing on the number one spot of the New York Times bestsellers list. Dr. Chapman has been directly involved in real-life family counseling for more than 30 years. His nationally syndicated radio program, Building Relationships, airs weekly on more than 200 stations, and his daily program, A Love Language Minute, airs on more than 220 stations. Dr. Chapman is a graduate of Moody Bible Institute and holds a BA and MA degrees in anthropology from Wheaton College and Wake Forest University, respectively. And he has received MRE and PhD degrees from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary and taken postgraduate work at the University of North Carolina and Duke University. Dr. Chapman and his wife, Carolyn, have been married for more than 40 years and reside in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Well, welcome to our show today, Dr. Chapman.
Well, thank you, Darlene. It's good to be with you.
Well, you know, I'm so glad you had time to take out of your busy schedule. I know you're touring all over and doing a lot of presentations. And, you know, first of all, let me just say congratulations on all your incredible accomplishments. We have just really been honored to have you as a guest on our show today.
Well, thank you, Darlene.
Let me go ahead and start by asking you information about the five love languages. Every person that I've ever connected with that has dealt with relationships, whether they're a psychologist or they're a coach or something like that, they've always recommended your book. And, you know, so I went out and I got it and I loved it. And, you know, when I was thinking about our show and all of our relationships, I thought you were the perfect person to bring on our show. And so why did you start, I mean, what made you decide to create the Five Love Languages? More specifically, you have a new release that's just come out. So what's different about the new one?
Well, you know, Darlene, I had been counseling probably for 15 years, and I realized I was hearing the same stories over and over again. One of them would say, I feel like my spouse doesn't love me. And the spouse would say, I don't know what else to do. You know, I do this and this and this, and they don't feel loved. I don't understand. And I knew I was hearing a pattern, but I didn't know what it was. So what I did, I went through about 12 years of notes that I made when I was counseling people, ask myself the question, when someone said, I feel like my spouse doesn't love me, what did they want? What were they complaining about? And their answers fell into five categories, and I later called them the five love languages. And, you know, after the book's been out and sold as many copies as it has, I've gotten a lot of feedback, pretty well convinced that these are fundamental. These five ways of expressing love emotionally tend to be fundamental to human nature.
Wow, you know, I enjoyed listening to each one of the love languages that you created and you've defined. And you're right, I mean, there's probably a lot of variations and a lot of different things, but it comes down to these core. Can you go ahead and tell us for our audience what those five love languages are?
Sure. One of them is words of affirmation, using words to affirm the person. You look nice in that outfit, really appreciate what you did. One of the things I like about you is... I love you. just, you know, words that affirm. You can speak the words, you can write the words, you could even sing the words. I mean, some people could sing the words, but it's using words to affirm the other person. And then there's gifts. It's universal to give gifts as an expression of love. We've never discovered a culture where gift-giving is not an expression of love. And the gift doesn't have to be expensive. We've always said it's the thought that counts, but it's not the thought left in your head. It's the gift that came out of the thought in your head.
Mm-hmm.
So gifts is a second love language. Then there's acts of service, doing something for the other person that you know they would like for you to do. In a marriage, that might be such things as cooking meals, washing dishes, vacuuming floors, mowing grass, trimming shrubs, walking the dog, changing the baby's diaper. Woo, big act of service. But doing something for the other person that you know they would like. And then there's quality time, giving them your undivided attention. I don't mean sitting on the couch watching television. Someone else has your attention. Now, if you discuss the TV program after it's over with each other, that could be quality time. But you have to give them your undivided attention. You can take a walk down the road. You can go out to eat. The important thing is we're together. We're giving this time to each other. And then there's physical touch. We've long known the emotional power of physical touch. In marriage, I'm talking about such things as holding hands, kissing, embracing, the whole sexual part of the marriage. And for some people, this is their primary love language. And the heart of the book has the thesis that each of us speaks a primary love language. One of these is more important to us than the other four. And seldom does a husband and wife have the same love language. So essentially, you have to learn a new language if you want your spouse to feel loved.
Wow, that's exactly, you know, what we've been looking at with your book and integrating that into our day-to-day life. And, you know, so why is the concept of the five love languages so important in a marriage?
I think the reason it's important is because we have a deep need to feel loved. And if you're married, the person you would most like to love you is your spouse. In fact, if you feel loved by your spouse, the world looks bright. But if you feel like they don't love me, they wish they weren't married to me, the world begins to look dark. So I think in order to meet that deep emotional need, the love language concept is so important. You know, in the beginning, of course, we fall in love. We have these euphoric feelings, and we're pushed along by these feelings. But that euphoria has an average lifespan of 2 years. We come down off the high. Then we have to be much more intentional in our love if we want to keep emotional warmth in the marriage. So I think it's important to discover each other's love language and speak it. Otherwise, what happens is when you come down off the emotional high of the in-love experience, the love tank gets empty, and you begin to have those feelings, you know, they don't love me. And then you begin to see the differences between the two of you. Many couples end up arguing about those differences, say negative things to each other, and after a while they're wondering, why did we get married? We don't even like each other. So, you know, in order to keep emotional love alive, you have to learn to express your love in a way that's going to be meaningful to the other person.
Can you explain the love tank, what that really refers to?
Well, I use that picture as an example or an illustration. You know, in a car, you have a gasoline tank, and you can fill it up, and you can drive a few hundred miles on it, but you'll have to fill it up again. So I like to picture inside all of us, there's a love tank, and you can fill it up. You can love them in the right language, and they really feel loved, but you'll have to fill it up again, you know, a day or two. You can't just do something one time, and they are forever going to feel loved. We have to continue to speak the language or fill the love tank, and if we do, then, you know, life is beautiful.
After reading the book myself and looking at our family dynamics and, you know, trying to determine which one of us has each love language, and, you know, on your website, I know that you have some assessment tools, which I went on and I figured out what my primary love language was. I had my husband do it, and I had our children do it, you know, so that we could all sort of, and we posted them up on our refrigerator.
Yeah, good. That's great. Yeah.
And, you know, that way there we could always stay, you know, present with what, you know, what each one of us is doing or saying to fill that love tank.
Yeah.
And, you know, not saying that we're perfect at it, but you know what I found interesting, Dr. Chapman, was my husband assumed that receiving gifts was my primary love language.
Mm-hmm.
When it turned out it was like one of the last ones.
Oh, yes. Okay.
So he would always, you know, continue to buy stuff. And don't get me wrong, I love presents, you
know.
Mm-hmm. I don't want him to stop that. But, you know, it turned out that I really wasn't, you know, the gifts are great and everything, but I'm more of the words of affirmation for
yeah.
me.
Yeah. You know, I often find that true with couples, that we assume we know the other person's language, even after we hear the concept. We assume we know what their language is. But in reality, it often turns out to be something different.
So how can a person, if they haven't taken, you know, the assessment on your website, how can they determine what their partner is for their love language? What would their, can they guess at what they think it is? Or
well, they can guess, but there's two or three ways that will help make the guess more educated. One is observe how your spouse responds to you and other people. If they are always giving people pats on the back, or if they hug everybody they encounter, physical touch is probably their language. They're speaking to others what they would like to receive for themselves. Or if they are always giving people encouraging words, then words of affirmation is probably their language. So observe their behavior. Secondly, what do they request of you most often? If they say periodically, could we take a walk after dinner tonight? Or could we go out to eat on Thursday night? Or could we get a weekend away this summer? They're asking you for quality time. So listen to what they ask you for, and you will see a pattern. And then third, listen to their complaints. The complaint really reveals the love language. If they say to you, we don't ever spend any time together. We're like two ships passing in the night. They're telling you, quality time is my language. I'm not getting it. If you go on a business trip and come home and they say, you didn't bring me anything? they're telling you, you know, I thought you would think about me. You'd bring me something. If they say to you, you know, I don't ever please you. I can't ever please you. They're telling you that words of affirmation is their language and they don't hear those words from you. Now, we tend to get defensive when our spouse gives us a criticism. But really, they're giving us valuable information. So if we can get over the initial response of being defensive and listen to what they are complaining about, the complaint reveals the love language.
So wouldn't you say that, well, obviously, we should be looking at trying to provide all five of the love languages on a regular basis, because I assume that everybody wants a little bit of all of them, except there's just the one primary that
yeah.
we have to at least fulfill that one to make them know, hey, we really do love you. We're doing everything we can to speak your language, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, if you sprinkle in the other four, you get extra credit for that. But if you don't speak their primary, you can be speaking some of the others, and they still will not feel loved. I mean, that happens all the time. So my recommendation is you give heavy doses of the primary, then you sprinkle in the other four, and they're going to feel loved, and then you'll be able to process the rest of life in a much more positive manner.
So talk about the in love experience and how that affects people.
Well, you know, we don't get up one day and say, I think I'll fall in love. But we do have the experience of meeting someone, and there's something about the way they look, the way they talk, the way they emote, that gives you what I call a tingle inside. And it's the tingles that motivate people to go out for a hamburger. And sometimes you actually lose the tingles on the first date. You find out something about them that you can't tolerate. And the next time they call you for a hamburger, you're not hungry. And that relationship never gets off the ground. But other people, every time you go out, every time you're together, it feels warmer and warmer. And eventually, you will say, one of you will say, you know, I think I could love you. You're testing the waters to see if they feel what you feel. And if they give you a positive response, such as, what would be so bad about that? Ooh, you have a tender evening. And the next time the moon is right, you'll probably say the words, I love you. And you wait for them to say, I love you too. From that juncture, it becomes an emotional obsession. You can't get them off your mind. You go to bed thinking about them. You wake up thinking about them. In your mind, they're the most wonderful person you've ever met. Now, your mother can see their flaws, but you can't. Your mother will say, honey, have you considered they haven't had a steady job in 5 years? You will say, oh, mama, give them a break. They're just waiting for the right opportunity. So it is a euphoric experience. People make decisions often in that euphoric state. They don't bother to look at anything else about the relationship. They don't listen to their mother. They don't listen to their friends who see things they don't see. And often these things don't come out until they get married and come down off the high. And then they say, why didn't I see that? Well, you know, the euphoric stage kind of blinds you to those things. But if you understand some of those things before you fall in love, you can perhaps get beyond the euphoria and be more realistic about what you're doing.
Wow. So, you know, if your love language or if your spouse's love language might be quality time, do you have some suggestions or tips on how to listen for those kind of cues in conversation?
Yeah, I think their complaints would be one thing I mentioned earlier. If they complain that we don't spend time together, or I wish we had more time together, or I wish we could go out more often, or those kind of things, that's a big clue that that's what they want. Or if when you give them quality time, you see them relax, you see them, you know, emote in a more positive manner, that's a good indication that quality time is what they're looking for. And for some people, this is their love language. This is what they want. I remember the wife who said to me, she said, you know, Dr. Chapman, my husband is a hardworking man. He helps me around the house. He'll wash dishes. He vacuums floors. He washes the car every Saturday. And she went on to say other things that he did. She said, but Dr. Chapman, we don't ever talk. We don't ever sit down and talk. Now, she didn't mean that they didn't exchange words with each other. They did. They talked about logistics, who's going to do this, who's going to do that. What she meant was, we don't ever sit down and talk. And for quality time people, this is what they mean. It's not that you talk on the run, but we sit down and we take time. And what that communicates to them is, I'm important to you. You're willing to drop everything else, turn the TV off, turn the computer off, put the magazine down, and look at me and interact with me. It makes me feel like that you value me. And, you know, there are men, for example, and women too for that matter, who can multitask. They can watch a game on TV. They can be working on their computer and hear everything their wife says. I mean, they can do that, but it's not quality time. And it doesn't count in terms of communicating love to her.
So would you say that those people that are, you know, words of affirmation and then quality time, you could almost kill two birds with one stone by sitting down and having a conversation together in that quality time, right?
Well, if words of affirmation is their primary or secondary, and then the other is quality time, then yes, during the quality time, you can give them positive words. But the big difference between those two languages is words of affirmation focuses on speaking to them positive things about themselves and using words to affirm them, whereas quality time focuses more on the time, the spending an extended time with them, talking, interacting. It's more on conversation than it is simply giving statements of affirmation.
That answered that question for me a little clearer. I appreciate that. You know, out of the love languages, which of them is the easiest to learn?
It depends on what you grew up with. If you grew up speaking one of these languages or you grew up receiving it, it's going to be relatively easy for you. If it's your primary language, that is the easiest one. It's easier for you to do for others what you know you would like to receive. But if you did not grow up speaking one of these languages, and you find out that your spouse is, that's their primary language, I can tell you it'll be a learning curve. But the good news is you can learn. For example, I meet men who say to me in particular, you know, Gary, I found out my wife's language is words of affirmation, but I just find it hard to say things like that to her. You know, you look nice, or I appreciate what you did. He said, it just doesn't come natural for me. Well, you know, I pretty much know he grew up in a home where he didn't receive those kind of words. He didn't hear them. He didn't speak them. Now he's an adult. It's not natural. But what I say to him is, you can learn to do this, and if you want your spouse to feel loved, then you've got to learn this language. So get you a notebook. Write down statements that you hear other people say, or things you read in a magazine or read in a book. Write them down. Stand in front of the mirror. Read them out loud so you hear yourself saying these things. Then you pick out one of those statements. Walk in the room where she is. She may be looking in the other direction. You say it, and then you can run. And you and what you did, you broke the sound barrier. You said it. The second time will be easier. The third time will be easier. And before long, you can actually look her in the eyes and say something like that to her. So you can learn any of these languages, even if you didn't receive them growing up.
Oh, that's perfect. Thank you for sharing that. That makes a lot of sense. You know, how do you stereotype the ability to speak acts of service? I think that's kind of a challenge for some people. And I guess it's the, what can you do for me? Is that kind of the, or what you can do for someone else? It's the doing part of it. Is that right?
That's right. That's right. If that's their language, if they tell you acts of service is my language, then if you ask them, what can I do to help you tonight? They'll tell you. They'll give you an idea. And then you do it. And they're going to feel loved. A man said to me the other day, he said, Dr. Chapman, I found out that my wife's language is acts of service. And she told me that my taking out the garbage without her asking was sexy to her. He said, if somebody had told me that 20 years ago, I would have been taking out the garbage twice a day. He said, nobody told me that. But the reality is, for that person, when you do those acts of service, they really feel loved. It communicates to them. You care about them. You love them. And it does interface with the whole sexual part of the marriage.
You know, in your book, you talk about all touches are not created equal. Can you explain that a little further?
Yeah. Well, we often assume that what makes me feel loved will make someone else feel loved. So if putting an arm on the shoulder makes me feel loved, I assume that that makes my spouse feel loved. Not necessarily true. If physical touch is your language, then almost any affirming touch is going to communicate to you. But if it's not their love language, it won't mean the same thing to them. You can do it. You can do the same thing they do to you, but they won't feel what you feel. And in that sense, the touches are different depending on the individual.
All right. Thank you for explaining that. You know, in your opinion, after someone reads the book and they've gone through the whole five love languages and they've tried to assess, you know, their primary love language and their spouse's, you know, what do you want the reader to really accomplish by reading this book?
Well, what I hope they will do is, first of all, understand their history and why perhaps they have not felt loved along the way from time to time. And my second hope is that they will say to each other, why don't we try this? Why don't we try speaking each other's language? I suggest you set a goal once a week. We're going to consciously try to speak each other's language. And when you do that, what happens is you begin to change the emotional climate. I have couples who say to me, we would not have believed that in 2 months it would be like we're on the second honeymoon. Now, that doesn't mean they go back to the euphoria of the in-love experience, but it does mean that emotional warmth has returned to that relationship, and they are now thinking of each other in positive ways because they're feeling positive toward each other. So that would be my hope, that they would actually try to speak each other's language and see what happens.
That's great, and I think we're going to be doing a little bit more of that in our home, and hopefully we'll start to see more of a difference. I noticed a little bit with, like I said, our children, both of theirs turned out to be quality time.
Okay.
And so we'll have to figure out a way to integrate all of that and make them feel the same way. So I know you have several books that you've done together with, you know, the editions. You have special editions. So you have like the men's edition, and you have a gift edition. You have one for children and teenagers, singles, and your five love languages of apology. Actually, can you tell me a little bit about that one, the apology?
Yeah, it's a similar concept. It's the idea that what one person considers to be an apology is not what another person considers to be an apology. So he says to her, "I'm sorry," and he thinks that he's apologized, but she's still waiting for the apology. And she says to him, if he says, "I apologize," she will say, "Well, that's not an apology. I'm sorry, that's not an apology." And so what we did, we asked thousands of people two questions. When you apologize to someone, what do you typically say or do? Secondly, when someone apologizes to you, what do you want to hear them say or do? And their answers fell into five categories. We really were not looking for five, but that's what happened. We discovered five ways that people apologize. So we describe those in the book. And say there's every chance in the world that your spouse has a different idea of what an apology looks like. And so if you'll discuss this together and say, you know, when I offend you, what do you really want to hear me say or do? What to you is a real sincere apology? If you have this information, then it's going to help you know how to apologize to the other person in the most meaningful way to them. So we've been very encouraged by the response to this book because most people have never even thought of it. See, we grow up learning to apologize from our parents. If the parent tells the little boy, "Johnny, don't push your sister down the stairs. Go tell her you're sorry." So he says, "I'm sorry." Well, at 32, if he offends his wife, that's very likely what he's going to say, "I'm sorry." That's all he ever was taught. But his wife had a different mother. You know, her mother said, when you do something wrong, you accept responsibility. You go to the person and say, "What I did was wrong. I should not have done that." You know, and maybe throw in, "I'm sorry." But it's more than "I'm sorry." It's accepting responsibility. And so, you know, helping people discover each other's apology language makes forgiveness a whole lot easier.
Wow, I can't wait to read that one. I think that's going to be fantastic because you don't know in a relationship when you may have either crossed the line or that wasn't acceptable to another person until their reaction. And then you have to backpedal and then finally admit that, you know, you did something wrong, and you have to be able to communicate that in a fashion that they want to accept it because it could do more damage if it's not repaired during that time. You know, can you share with us what things that you're working on currently and how our audience can possibly be involved or be a part of what you're working on?
Yeah, two things. I just released a book called Things I Wish I'd Known Before We Got Married. It's for singles. It's trying to say to them, if you spend more time preparing for marriage, you're more likely to have a good marriage. You know, you spend a lot of time preparing for your vocation. Why not spend some time preparing for marriage? Not the wedding. I'm not talking about the wedding. I'm talking about the marriage. So that book, I think, well, it's going to help a lot of singles. And then a book that will be coming out in August of 2011 is we're taking the love languages to the workplace, but we're not calling them love languages. The book's going to be entitled The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace. What we know is that if people feel appreciated by their supervisors and the people with whom they work, they're going to be more productive. The work climate's going to be more positive. They're going to be more loyal to the company. We believe that this concept has potential of changing the work climate for many, many people. So we're excited about that. I wrote this one with Dr. Paul White, who is a psychologist who lives in Wichita, Kansas. And so that'll be released in August, and we're really excited about it. But folks can go to fivelovelanguages.com and can pick up ideas on all of my books. And you mentioned the online quiz is also there. It's free. And people can also learn where I'm doing marriage seminars around the country.
That's fantastic. This has been wonderful. And we're at the end of our show today, but just wanted to ask you real quick, is there anything else that you might want to share with our audience before we part?
Well, I think the only thing I would say, Darlene, is that marriages either grow or they regress. They never stand still. And the marriages that are growing are the marriages where people are reading books and talking about them. They're going to marriage seminars and discussing things. Are they talking with each other about things we can do to enhance our relationship? The people who drift always drift apart. You never drift together. If you're going to grow, you have to nurture the marriage by reading and going to seminars and discussing, taking classes along the way. But people who do that find that their marriage grows, and that would be my desire for your listeners.
Oh, that's fabulous. Again, thank you, Dr. Chapman, for taking time out of your day and for being our special guest today on the Accomplish Radio Show. I know you've inspired hundreds of thousands of individuals to just speak the love language of their partners and the people that mean the most in their life, and building longer, more intimate relationships with those people that you love. So, again, thank you.
Well, you're welcome, darling. Good to be with you, and you keep up the good work.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. So, again, make sure that you visit Dr. Chapman's website at 5lovelanguages.com, and I believe 5 is the number 5, correct?
Yes, or you could spell it out either way.
Okay, perfect. Again, thank you for being our guest on our show today.
Thank you.
If you would like to be a guest on the Accomplish Radio Show, please visit our website at AccomplishMagazine.com and submit a radio show request, and we'd be happy to review it and get back to you. Today's Accomplish Radio Show was brought to you by the St. Louis Networking Club. When traditional marketing isn't enough, join the club. You can learn more at stlouisnetworking.com. If you enjoyed today's broadcast, please mark our show as one of your favorites. Simply visit accomplishradio.com and click on the follow button. You'll receive reminders of all of our upcoming shows. We want to thank you, our audience, and our special guest for spending time with us today and for sharing Accomplish Magazine and Radio Show with your friends. Again, please visit our website at AccomplishMagazine.com and share your success stories with us. I'm your host, Darlene Willman, the publisher of Accomplish Magazine, wishing you a lifetime of accomplishments.